Welcome, everyone. This is Mia Ferraletto, publisher of New Observations magazine. Today we have the distinct pleasure of welcoming hemp activist, visionary, and really one of the key people who launched the entire industrial hemp movement in America, Doug Fine. Doug, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you so much for having me, Mia. It's an honor to be among a real lot of amazing people that you've spoken with, and surprising to me to be included in their company. So thank you for bringing me on here in my hemp field, close to harvest.
Oh, you're in your hemp field. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Very fragrant.
And harvesting tomorrow with the full moon, is that right?
Yes. Before we spoke, I've been walking the field as I do every day, and you may hear the bees in the background at some point during our conversation. There's a lot of them, tons of native bees, but just such a pleasure to have pollinators around. But, so I've been looking because it makes a lot of sense to harvest on the full moon, on the full harvest moon, and the plants are pretty much ready, but not every plant I'm noticing is uniformly ripe. And I grow for food mainly, so I'm looking at seeds rather than just flowers or other factors.
Well, I know you're out in New Mexico in a beautiful spot, remote, some would say, but we're really interested in hearing about what brought you there and a bit about your background. I think you're from the East Coast, if memory serves. And also, how your connection to the land has been built and how that has been a catalyst in terms of your own personal and spiritual development.
Thank you for that. Whenever it was, a million or three or however long years it was ago that your ancestor and mine formed into groups and became hunter-gatherers, it was known that you had to regenerate where you were or wouldn't keep providing this bounty, this Garden of Eden. And it seems like a kindergarten, everything you needed to know you learned in kindergarten lesson. And I'm grateful for all the experiences that I was able to have leading up to this point to get me here today, where my life and my messaging and my work, everything, really the air I breathe right now is a result of it, from the terpenes coming off the hemp flowers right now. It's geared to a basic message, that basic message of not only is it natural and imperative that we, in every step of what we do, not just in planting our food or how we build our homes or how we travel, but in every aspect of life and work, we're thinking now about at least putting back as much as we've taken. And this guides every step of my life to a fault. If you go into my kitchen in the morning and think that you might be picking up a glass filled with baking soda, it could be diatoms or it could be herbal supplements for the cat. So when you're repurposing and thinking about this, that we have a no plastic junk rule in the house. So I tell you all this to start just because it obviously fits into my mode of cultivating hemp and any of the food crops that we grow. And I feel like the win-win is that it's easy. It's not hard to be to live. I'm not all the way there yet, but to be intentional in trying to live an increasingly regenerative life in as many facets as possible, it's not hard. And when it comes to strictly hemp, I believe far and away best product. Your harvest will be superior, whether you're just feeding superfood to your family or marketing a commercial product, if your enterprise is regenerative and you are there loving that crop and especially building soil, which is step one every day, you're going to harvest a better product the way that squeezing an orange is going to give you tastier orange juice than buying frozen concentrate from an anonymous source in a supermarket.
Absolutely true. And we're at that point right now, as you and I have discussed previously, that as people are waking up, they're becoming more connected not only to the planet and to our Mother Earth, but to absolutely everything around us, which is reinforcing this need for authenticity in every area of our life.
Yeah, and it would be, you know, being optimists, we believe the Renaissance is about to cross the finish line, about to reach that critical mass. And there's so much evidence, even just the 500,000 of federally permitted hemp acres in the U.S. just a few years after federal legalization, something that would have thought seemed astounding. 7 years ago, 8 years ago, there was not a single U.S. Senate voting for legalizing even hemp, let alone cannabis. And now we're at the point of federal legalization of all cannabis, which, of course, is how humans have lived for the last 8,000 years, one of its most important plants, except for these, 80 years of prohibition. So there's reason to be optimistic. And resistance, I notice, most people are coming on board this ship that I meet in all areas. I live in a very rural and politically conservative valley in a nook in New Mexico, which is a pretty progressive state. My valley is pretty darn conservative. And as well, when I as you mentioned in the kind intro, I grew up in the East Coast. And so I have a lexicon that includes the folks that are active in that leading industry of that island, the financial industry, which is, such a huge segment of our economy these days. And when I speak to people on the latter group, folks that are intelligent, kind-hearted, love their families, trustworthy people that have a lot personally invested in that financial market game, that system, when they come to that awakening that you mentioned, what I've heard multiple times is it's really scary. It's scary to think about that safety net because they're thinking about their well-being after retirement or their kids being able to afford some kind of college tuition. And if everybody starts to regionalize their economy instead of investing in stocks, if everybody starts seeking as customers, let's say in any kind of farm product, we'll focus on hemp right today. If you're seeking out, okay, who are the regenerative farmer-run hemp operations in my ecosystem, which is going to be produce the best hemp qualitatively, but also that my body wants because I'm breathing this air and all the pollens from all the plants and everything. This is the plant that thrives here in this ecosystem. As I want to thrive here, I want to get my hemp products regionally or cultivate, better yet, cultivate it myself, but through a CSA, whatever, through a co-op, through a farmer's market, or just doing your research online, who in my region is that provider that is rebuilding the soil, saving the future for all of us by sequestering carbon in regeneratively grown hemp that then turns out to be the best quality hemp and from my region, so lower carbon miles. I don't want to ramble too long, but as the thinking on the entrepreneurial side for a minute, as the producer of this, which my home crop is not. I cultivate elsewhere for a very small run craft hemp product. But when I think about that, I think about things like regenerative packaging, very little plastic, compostable labels with non-toxic stickum, basic stuff. And even if an enterprise has maybe higher distribution ambitions than I do, thinking about, okay, what's the end game, right? We're trying not to just be this kind of Kmart, Walmart, every place thing. We're trying to be successful. We want our family to be comfortable. You have a right to that, but we also want to be building our community, healing. So what's the limit that my region What's the mileage range? Do we deliver in electric vehicles? You can go deep down this very blessed rabbit hole, and the deeper one goes, the better. So when we're talking about the spiritual side of hemp, it's deeply, deeply embedded in it. I mean, when you're giving thanks for your office every day, because your office is outside in a polyculture hemp field, you're a lucky human being.
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a huge gift to be surrounded by such an extraordinary life force on all levels. I, as you may recall, because I think that's when we first connected, I was living in Canada for a couple of years with the man I was involved with, who was a medical grade grower, licensed medical grade grower, and I learned about industrial hemp because of his involvement with medical marijuana. And once I started learning about hemp, I was just completely floored by the extraordinary range of gifts that it provides to all of us, and the fact that it was deliberately taken away from us for close to 80 years.
It's astounding that it happened, and it almost feels Tolkienian in terms of a narrative arc and a style of Darkest Before the Dawn. I mean, if you really go, I wasn't there when this early prohibition stuff happened, but folks whose research seems good to me, folks that I know and trust, what's not often talked about is that the model for the federal prohibition of cannabis was first implemented on the state/territory level in Arizona and California. Earlier, the turn of the 20th century, California was first. And that very old political trick, but adapted to the new world of blaming a scapegoat for, in this case, a non-existent problem, came easily in the struggle between Anglo and Latino forces for power in that part of the country. It's a struggle that kind of continues today. And the federal prohibition of cannabis that started in 1937, all these theories about fat cats of various industries being threatened by hemp, I'm sure the fat cat industries were happy about it. And also, there is no doubt that Hearst, in his newspaper chain, fomented the nonsense of what we call reefer madness today, you know, but basically that propaganda blaming people for stuff. But his goal might very well have just been sell papers with any kind of sensation. Yeah, it's great. I love it. It's a great sensation. Jazz singers seducing women with devil weed. Are you kidding me? It's great. We'll sell some papers here. So as far as going back to Harry Anslinger, the actual guy, that he ran prohibition, alcohol prohibition. It was failing. It was ending. It was about to be overturned by an extraordinary constitutional amendment. And he needed a new job for him and his employees. He was a good bureaucrat. He was trying to keep his team employed and buying, you know, as Eddie Murphy would say, the G.I. Joe with the kung fu grip for the, able to afford it at Christmas time or whatever. So he invented a new problem. Did he know that this was one of humanity's longest plans, or did he just say, wow, I like what Arizona, California are doing with this. This is good. This is good. We'll map it from Latinos to black jazz singers, and we got ourselves a problem here. And whether or not those players, I read a lot of authors who postulate that we should be thankful to the villains, to the Judases, right? Because if Harry Anslinger hadn't messed around with this vital plant, starved our endocannabinoid systems with which we've co-evolved with this plant, as Michael Pollan likes to say, we've co-evolved with this plant. You can't take this plant away. You can't take any plant away. It's a human right. And it's just like, thank you, because it's coming back so, so strongly now, so strongly that the regenerative side of hemp has a major, major force at the table. You mentioned, Mia, that hemp has so many good benefits. I want to be clear that to myself and to a lot of others, cannabis hemp is one plant, and I can go into more detail if you want, but the delineation between it is recent and arbitrary, and that the end game of policy for folks I mean, not to get too grandiose, who care about humanity's survival, but also who want to see the hemp industry thrive in a regenerative way. There is no more delineation on, let's say, the federal level or any kind of level between cannabis and hemp. The farmer's free to grow what he or she wants. At the retail level, if a flower product where the cannabinoids reside, like THC, are above a level at which a state thinks is a threshold for psychoactivity, that state sure can regulate that as an adult use product for adult social or medicinal uses. But the burden will be taken off the farmer, which is, as an independent farmer, I think, step one.
It's very important. We're going to take our first commercial break here, and we'll be right back with Doug Fine.
1968, Glynis McKay is a desperate woman. She's been told she's dying of cancer. She can no longer speak. She receives a psychic communication from aliens that she has been in touch with for years. Listen to her talk about what happened.
I went into this huge room, and there were many other people sitting and some laying on couches that had come there for healing. And then he said to me, "You understand who sent you here to me?" And I'm thinking, what does he mean? And then he said, "You've been having communication for many, many years from what you call UFOs. And I thought, my God, how does he know this? And I'm trying to sort of push back on the chair, looking a bit shocked probably. And he said to me, "When you leave here at 10 past 12 today, there are two craft over the house and you will see them."
And she and her mother-in-law both saw a UFO hanging over their house. Subsequently, Glynis's cancer disappeared, and she went on to become one of the world's most extraordinary mediums. UnknownCountry.com and Dreamland are among the very few places Glynis has interviewed. She became close friends with Ann Streber and with myself, and in our own personal lives revealed some extraordinary experiences. I had a contact with a dead friend so incredible with Glynis that it convinced me that there must be something more. There almost has to be. In fact, many things have taken me in that direction, but this was just shocking. In any case, you can hear all of this as a subscriber to UnknownCountry.com by going to our vast archive. It's so simple to search. Just look at the subject cloud on the left side after you enter the subscriber area, and you'll find so much there. Go to UnknownCountry.com right now and subscribe. It's an immensely valuable and deeply empowering archive, and the site needs your support. Did you know that practically all of my books in print are now available directly on the new UnknownCountry.com store? Go to UnknownCountry.com, click on the store tab on the masthead, and explore. You can find everything there from A New World all the way down to some older titles like Black Magic, which is actually about remote viewing, but it's not about the public remote viewing program. It's about something else rendered into fiction. All kinds of interesting stuff in this store. A whole lifetime of my discoveries and explorations in fiction and nonfiction. Make use of the UnknownCountry.com store. It's a lot of fun.
So, Doug, you're raising such an important point about hemp and cannabis, but also about the fact that not only were the authorities clamping down on the medicinal properties of both plants, both strains of plants. Hello?
Sorry about that. I'm back.
Oh, that's okay. Not only were authorities clamping down on the medicinal properties of both strains of the plant, but they were also clamping down on the access, in a sense, to higher realms that that cannabis provides to those who are using it for that purpose. So, you know, not only was Hearst controlling the paper industry and DuPont was controlling the plastics and the rollout of plastics and so forth, but it was also another means of control for our consciousness and expansion of our consciousness. Would you agree with that?
Well,
and
yes.
Well-being.
Yes, and the question of whether it was conscious at the time, I don't know, but it's definitely mappable now in a conscious way to the idea of plants in general and whole plant well-being, good diet, exercise being the best way to stay healthy, as opposed to relying on popping pills. And so the dynamic I noticed, so in my family, my sweetheart is a really skilled herbalist, and I feel very grateful about this. You know, only one of infinite reasons why I'm grateful to have my family as I do. But this one is really has had practical applications. I know you spend a lot of time in Vermont or in Vermont, and so the Lyme issue, and I mean, it's really she has an effective cure for me. It's worked twice, and second time, you know, just keeping it away entirely. And so the idea that model of every time there is an issue that we're going to this particular guy, and then we're going to get these pills, right? Like that's a business model that understands and is genuinely threatened by whole plant wellness in general. And so it's just really, I think, about educating people so a critical mass of people know. And the hard part, too, is that we're so into taking different camps these days. And for me personally, I appreciate, I'm reading some writings that Einstein did, and I'm appreciating how, you know, this loaded word of science, how really smart guys and ladies in physics and math helped understand a lot about the universe with no other intent other than that. Maybe there's a back intent of some of like enhancing the prestige of their own nation or something like that, or in earlier centuries of their patron or whatever, dukedom. But like, basically, a guy like Einstein was just like, oh, wait a second. If we know that the speed of light's constant, then we can go further than the matrices that we've been able to use to map the universe in the past. And it's like, I appreciate that. And so this concept of you know, all or nothing is problematic. Even in the world of CBD, the hemp products that I take that I in my own put into my own body, I happen to grow myself, USDA organic certified and all that good stuff. Loved, you know, personally cultivated by myself and friends. And it wouldn't register very high in any one cannabinoid such as CBD, but it has what they call an entourage effect of lots of different cannabinoids interplay with terpenes and infused in organic hemp seed oil. So there's a lot going on about it that is what I would like to tell, because I am blessed with wellness. Oh my gosh, how lucky am I that I can walk and think and talk and all is good with my health. So, but my colleague Janelle Ralph of Palmetto Harmony and Ari Botanicals in South Carolina, she got into hemp because her daughter has a serious condition. It's not epilepsy. I'll massacre the pronunciation. So it's just a lot of epileptic type fits, but like serious. And her daughter wasn't supposed to live past 9. The regular stuff was the regular, you know, mainstream treatments, pharmaceuticals weren't doing any good. She was in the special category, and she found, boom, CBD. Went from however many horrible numbers of seizures per day to now she goes usually a month or two before having a very minor one. And so, and she's lived already way past how long she was supposed to live, you know, people with her condition. So she wants this, the amount of CBD per serving that she saw
gave her daughter Harmony's life. She named the company after her daughter Harmony, Palmetto Harmony. And she's also organic and farm to table, grows it, the whole thing herself. So she's on the page for me in this regenerative mode. But for her, hemp, the plant hemp means this cannabinoid, this compound, CBD, that saved her daughter's life. And she wants that much CBD in every dose. And so would I, if Harmony were my daughter, God forbid, I had a loved one or someone I knew of who, needed a cancer treatment for which a particular cannabinoid, and it's not just CBD that's showing some results in anti-carcinogen studies, would maybe helpful for this type of cancer. And for folks who are listening here, nothing is a miracle cure. Everybody's body's different. And, you know, this isn't like, oh, my gosh, really? I can give CBD and, you know, my uncle's epilepsy is going to go away. It's not like that. And that's another factor in this discussion, but it's also not an instant cure. So, you know, the sad story I always hear about people coming to cannabis for loved ones' cancer treatments is, why did we wait so long? So I'll just leave it at that, and do consult your medical professional, because I'm not one. But the wider point, Mia, of for me, there's not a clear delineation between pharmaceutical and whole plant. Let's say even when it comes to cannabis applications, I'm 100% on the whole plant side, but it's a big tent, and I'm okay with people who will want a pharmaceutical-style application of hemp.
Well, 70, 80 years ago, wasn't marijuana the biggest over-the-counter cure-all in the average drugstore in America, wasn't it, you know, for arthritis and cramps and headaches? And there's a long history in terms of using cannabis in that way.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Yeah, in the 19th century, it was the delivery agent for just about everything. It was in huge numbers of medicinal products listed in the, you know, the most sort of in the academy publications, the pharmacopoeia, medical journals, everything. It was the delivery mechanism. Where I live in New Mexico, there's the Kirandara tradition. It's often translated as folk healing, but I think of it more as natural healing, natural wellness. And I have some friends in that community who said that, you know, cannabis was used as the delivery agent for just about any treatment in traditional Mexican culture, because even if it wasn't specifically indicated for a particular ailment, which is in most cases it can really help because of our pervasive endocannabinoid system. That's a different biochemical discussion. But even if it was, let's just say it wasn't totally the main delivery medicine or herb that the curandero was trying to administer. Let's say the vaquero cowboy had a kidney stone, and he's riding in agony on his horse for 2 days. When he flumps down on her treatment couch, the cannabis in it is going to react with his endocannabinoid system and help him relax and ease the pain, while she perhaps is administering other herbs to break up the kidney stone. So yeah, it was delivered worldwide and not in just about in a huge number of medical applications right up until prohibition started in the U.S. in 1937.
It's very interesting how the you know, kind of mind control piece of all of this, the vilification of cannabis and hemp, has influenced people who have not taken the time to do their own personal research. In September of 2016, a friend contacted me because her 5-year-old grandson had a kidney taken out from cancer, and asked about CBD oil, and I contacted Charlotte's Web, and the Stanley Brothers sent Charlotte's Web to my friend and her daughter for her grandson. And his mother was terrified of giving it to him. They lived in Texas at the time, and it wasn't quite legal then. But he went through a complete round of chemo and radiation, still had cancer, was halfway through his second round of chemo and radiation, and his doctors were suggesting a bone marrow transplant at that point, when his mother wandered into a chat room and people were talking about CBD oil and specifically Charlotte's Web in this particular case. And, you know, every couple of months I would ask my friend, has he started taking the CBD oil yet? You know, nothing. Finally, his mother decided to give it to him. His appetite returned immediately, and by the time he got back to the doctor, he was cancer-free, and he's been cancer-free ever since. And in a situation like that, I really hold his mother responsible for putting him through hell, really, for a lot longer than he needed, you know, to be there. I can't imagine all the suffering that his little body went through with all that chemo and radiation.
You know, probably, and I'm just thinking about this as a parent, that probably quite possibly, one of the dynamics there was weighing which is worse, following the rules, like what you're commanded to do for medical treatment, versus losing your custody of your kid, especially, yeah, in Texas, that, you know, what's the greater good, the fear of the kid being separated from you, you know, and this is just what a true human rights violation cannabis prohibition, I'll say was, because thank heaven, it's pretty much over, you know. And the other thing, too, is I have some sympathy for this, but when it comes, you were talking about sort of how the minds work and the minds being freed. Without generalizing about generations, I do notice that for folks that are like today, almost you could almost say under 30, they pretty much like don't see what the hullabaloo is like it's pretty much over. And you see it reflected in policy. I mean, growing up as I did on the East Coast, short of murder, even in the liberal community, the worst thing you could do would be caught being one of those low lives that you know, those non-achievers that smoke pot. And you could really, your life would really change and be ruined no matter what your color, shade, culture, or gender at that time. It could happen in that culture. And now it's way de facto decriminalized, not as progressive as general, you know, the East Coast is catching up in a lot of ways. But of course, Vermont, as always, among the leaders, I should shout out and not generalize about the East Coast. But the change is coming so quickly that the stigma is so almost gone that sometimes there are folks under 30 who, you know, they're aware of the reefer madness craziness, like they're aware of a lot of stupid policies, like horrible policies like segregation, but it doesn't apply to them as much. And the fastest growing, in just about every poll, fastest growing segment of the economy to support full cannabis legalization, complete erasure of the stigma and all that good stuff, are folks over 60, and partly is because they're seeing how useful and pleasant and helpful the plant is in their lives. But it's all empowered me. It's really a fun part of my job that my messaging is a lot about, you know, this is what the original sort of the good side of the American Revolution was about. This is about freedom and individualism and all that stuff. And so keeping aside any other feelings about slavery and treatment of indigenous people and the areas that were not awakened to at the time, there was steps forward being made. And so to reach those folks, because, you know, these are folks maybe the last to hear the kind of messaging that we're talking about, the folks that are really into the storyline, I always look like what I am, a New Mexico rancher. You know, I I present myself in a collared shirt, and I wear a cowboy hat, and the argument is, I'm one of you. I drive a Ford truck, albeit powered by vegetable oil most of the time, and we are for the Patriots are for cannabis. The Patriots are for healthy living. The Patriots are for regional economies. So I guess I'm trying to broaden that messaging, at least with regard to healthy living and regenerative agriculture, to demographics that maybe aren't hearing that in the everyday media that they consume.
I'm curious, since you live in such a mystical place, if you've had any specific experiences or visions while you're working with the plants, any kind of direct communication from the mother plant or the archetypal mother that works through the hemp and cannabis plants, because she's certainly a very powerful being.
It's funny that you mention the mother plant. All of our home crop this year comes from a single mother from last year's crop, and I saved her. And I'm walking right over to her right now, here at the entrance of our hemp garden, and touching her roots right now. And yeah, brought her out and surrounded her to show all her children. And I'm like, wow, you have a couple hundred. If you count every seed, you have a couple hundred thousand. Healthy children and really healthy. It's just a beautiful, beautiful crop this year. So I don't know if they consciously appreciate it. And in terms of my own experiences, first and foremost, just about all of life to me is a mystical experience. Maybe it's because, you know, my kids are getting to a certain level of math and they're in their homeschooling, or like I said, I've been reading Einstein, but like the absurd odds against getting him a second of conscious life is and then to be able to do it in good health, that is a mystical, spiritual, religious experience every day. I'm not kidding, Rick, really, that's really how I feel. But to answer the question more specifically about, you know, in working with hemp plants and other plants around our house, and, you know, I'd like to maybe throw in the fact that for most of the time we've lived here, we've had goats and chickens and ducks too. I say most because every now and then we move them on for a little while so we can not be working for them all the time. You know, I'm working for the hemp plant. And they give us so much. Whenever we don't have them, we miss them. But it's a more of a longer-term awakening for me, especially about plants, that I can walk by and do what Madeline Engel would call kithing, sending a mental and loving psychic communication to the plants, and they go, no, I'm nowhere near the inventor of this. I mean, just my friend, the soil expert, Chris Trump, said the other day, his handle on soil steward, great guy on building soil, which is how we get good hemp, which is how we sequester carbon. But he said there's nothing that a plant likes more than the farmer's shadow. And so this is obviously a really old idea. Be in your crop every day. It's the number one lesson. And I want to be. It's completely the happiest spot of a happy life. Over the course of several years, maybe 5 years now, the cannabis plant has helped awaken me to the plant intelligence in general, the way we look at our native plants and the way that we grow all our plants. And once you've opened that door, there's so much. When you think about this microbial ecosystem that's under the ground, that's so vital for everything else, from clean water filtration and retention to how your hemp and kale and tomatoes taste and how nutrient packed they are, and these good microbes. I'm really a beginner at this stuff. I was way more of an animal. My totemic experiences have been after years living in Alaska with animals and cats, especially cats, wild cats, all over the world, and so it's new. My family members have more of the green thumb than I do, but what we do consciously do for soil building is at the right time of year, which is coming up actually here pretty soon, where after we do harvest and processing, we go up in the higher elements of our watershed and look for moist places. You kind of pull open like decaying wood, pull it up and look underneath. You only need a very little bit. You want to do this regeneratively, but any ecosystem, you'll see strains of mycelium, the healthy local fungus. And through a process that I learned through this fellow soil steward, Chris Trump, that I was mentioning, he's part of the Korean natural farming tradition, and there's tons of good soil building. It's not limited to just this one that called Korean natural farming, but there's a method for brewing that out into a compost tea and building the good fungus in your soil. So that's fun, and it's working, because a year or two later you can bring up a chunk of soil and flip it over and see it's thriving. And, you know, again, at the danger of getting grandiose, you start with that, and then in the end you're saving your own family and humanity are playing a role, because that's the beginning of sequestering carbon.
Right. We will come back to that point in just a moment. We're going to take our second commercial break now. Be right back.
War Day is one of Whitley Strieber's most powerful books. Join him and his co-author Jim Konietka as they travel across the United States devastated by limited nuclear war. This acclaimed novel was originally published in the 1980s, but now that North Korea has said that they can hit the U.S. with nukes, it's more timely than ever. Don't miss this informative, exciting, and convincing testament to the power of the human spirit in challenging times like our own. Get the ebook for $3.99. Go to Strieber.com for this and all of Whitley's great books.
There was an incredible UFO wave going on back in 2007. Forgotten all about it? Well, we haven't on unknowncountry.com, and you can still explore it with one of the leading experts who was involved personally, Brian Vike. Listen to this.
My good friend of mine, he's in the UK, believe it or not, and of course I'm in Canada, and between the two of us, just two of us, we pulled in. Now this is going to be a rough one. I think I stopped it at 430. For reported sightings for Canada alone in 2007.
This is an excerpt from one of literally more than 1,000 different episodes of our various podcasts on unknowncountry.com. But how do you access them? We have a powerful search engine that enables you to access them by subject, but now also, when you go to the podcast drop-down menu, you will see at the bottom, Podcast Archive. This takes you to lists of all of our podcasts organized by year. And you can click on any year and browse through everything that's in that year for that podcast. This is a huge website, and we work more every day to make it accessible. For example, subscribers can now listen to the subscriber version of Dreamland on an app. There are a number of apps out there that will accommodate this, and subscribers will find more information about it in the subscriber section of unknowncountry.com on the Dreamland page. So for this and so much more, the time to subscribe to unknowncountry.com is right now. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe to this website. We need you. And I can assure you, you need us.
Welcome back to the show. This is so interesting, Doug, in terms of, you know, you mentioned that you're reading Einstein right now, and we're all very much entering into the quantum field as our own consciousness rises, our ability to connect in much the way that Dr. Emoto first made aware to all of us about how we're consciously impacting the quality of our water, how the crystals changed based on our emotions that we're emitting, that, you know, everything around us is picking up on. But we're also, it seems, connecting to life in its essence with what you're describing here, you know, the basic universal life force that's in each and everything around us in the and throughout the universe. And somehow I truly feel that hemp and cannabis are kind of leading the charge on that one, you know, the understanding that we have a cannabinoid system within our own bodies and the way that hemp and cannabis are coming to the forefront of society and culture and just the fact that we can make, you know, tens and tens of thousands of products from hemp that the average person has no clue about. But yet all of that is being revealed right now.
I agree. It is the spearhead. It's the for whatever reason, it's the cannabis hemp renaissance. It's social impact. It's public safety impact. All positive. It's economic impact. Huge. All of it is making what's happening with it being very carefully watched. It's what economists call a disruptor. And the last big one was Silicon Valley, and then there was the automobile industry and good old Tesla and Edison on electricity before that. Like there was, you know, railroads. There was just huge movements of industries and economic impacts. And hemp's renaissance is deeply embedded in that. And so it's the spearhead of what I hope will become the rebirth of the biomaterials era, where all of our what they call the industrial feedstock, everything that goes into a car part or fencing or just about everything, is coming from something that is regeneratively cultivated instead of synthesized from petrochemicals. So we all know the reason for this is win-win. It's also better performance. I go everywhere carrying this plastic goat made from U.S.-grown hemp to sort of symbolize the compostable industrial future and goodbye Pacific garbage patch and all that. For a couple of years, I was an affiliated researcher with a project in Hawaii, and that was, let me tell you, Mia, when you're told your job is to go to Hawaii like six or eight times a year and work in a hemp field and then
oh, boy.
I mean, you can only be thankful. I saw, this metaphor for Hawaii, which has to import almost all of its stuff, food and all of its gear and every, you know, replacement plastic filter on a car. And so it comes from halfway across the world because it's almost equidistant between Asia and the U.S. So it's like take your pick, 3,000 miles from a normal chain store, you know, auto supply store supplier in the west coast of the U.S. that's already getting it from leapfrogging you from probably from factories in Asia. Or just get it from factories in Asia. Grow fibrous biomaterials, plants like hemp and other plants. Different plants will be ideal for different applications in the real world. But you grow these plants and then you 3D print from the fiber. And I've done this for a TV show that I'm making. I've filmed it. And it's not, it's totally doable. Especially the compostable stuff that you do from, replacing kind of like the styrofoams of the world that come from pulping, that's not hard. And the other part of like when you're actually 3D printing, yeah, I mean, you have to think about energy inputs on digital age devices and maintenance in parts of the world, certain parts of the world or whatever, but, it's not super hard to do, especially for PLA, the type of plastics, for instance, that go into Legos, that kind of like really solid, hard plastics. It's doable. Quick postscript. We were talking earlier about what were the captains of industry thinking at the time of cannabis prohibition. One really fun truth nugget from that era that I discovered from an Illinois hemp activist group that had done their work was that is it Sherman Williams? Yeah, Sherman Williams, I think, Paint. Their executives were in this written exchange of letters that would be funny if it weren't, you know, leading to this the problems that have happened environmentally in the world for this next century. Right as Prohibition were begging Harry Anslinger at the new Department of Narcotics, what are you doing? We need hemp seed oil for our paints. First of all, the farmers, we want to support the farmers who are growing it. Secondly, like, we need it. It's the best thinner and, you know, filler agent for our paint. It makes us outperform the other paints. And now we've got to get it from somewhere else and ship it from abroad. What are you doing? We need this plant. So there were people, for very bottom line reasons, speaking the truth all along during cannabis prohibition.
That's amazing. I do have a little anecdote to share. When I started my relationship with the man I lived with in Canada for 2 years, he had just gotten into the medical marijuana business, and from my perspective, it seemed like he had a few scraggly plants, you know, that he was cultivating. And shortly after we began dating and I started to drive from Vermont up to Canada to stay with him for a week or so at a time, I was back in Vermont and he was doing his gardening, and the goddess, the goddess started talking to him. He is a yogi. He had been to India at 19 and he meditates every day. But all of a sudden, he saw my face and private parts in the cannabis plants, and he heard a voice say, "You better take care of her." And he told me he literally jumped out of his skin. And as soon as I got there, these plants just started going wild. It was like a jungle down there. And we were together for almost 2 years, and when I moved out, his entire crop died. So even though I had no relationship with the cannabis plant until we got together, the connection was, you know, my connection to nature and the environment and the spiritual world. And it was quite an extraordinary event. And from his experience, that's what really got me to understand that I had a really big connection to the hemp plant, too.
Wow, that's beautiful. And it also reminds me of another relevant thing in terms of regenerative hemp and the breadth of what the cannabis hemp plant offers, and a dynamic of the rebirth. And that surrounds dioecious, or male and female hemp cultivation, versus synthemia, for without seeds, female-only cultivation. So the hemp cannabis world, as I've mentioned, and I really mean it, is a big tent. It's not for only one philosophy or one type of cultivation. And, you know, we should keep the loving God, the message of plants, the message that the plant has given to all of us, in our minds as we interact and speak with each other. And so I'll only just say what's the sort of mode of cultivation that I like best. And the way that I like best is I'm very much a dioecious farmer, meaning planting from seed in native soil under God's sun, and loving and building the soil from, ideally from as many native inputs as possible, besides the local mycelium I mentioned earlier. You know, it's just basically old organically fed goat poop and their remaining alfalfa in their barn, boom, goes on and fertilizes and provides weed matting and all kinds of great stuff. Not that we, it's a polyculture crazy field. Hemp is just one field, one crop in our garden as it's been for 8,000 years. There's hemp right around our tomatoes, right around our basil, et cetera, beans. And so speaking of 8,000 years, for 8,000 years until about 50 years ago for all cannabis and about 15 years ago for hemp, all cannabis was cultivated dioecious, male and female. That's what farmers did. They put seeds in the ground and it grew up, and some were male and some were female. And so even folks that were aficionados of what today we call psychoactive cannabis, up until mid to late 70s, were receiving cannabis that was fertilized. So for those folks, before my time, they would get their, if they were just a sort of a customer, not a farmer, they would get their cannabis in lids and sift out seeds and stems and smoke flowers and leaves. And today, THC levels are generally much higher because people are growing sensimilla, just female flowers, which are, in direct terms, they are, what's a positive way to put it? I was going to say sexually frustrated females, but they are females that are seeking to breed.
They're seeking to breed, right.
That the THC and the and all these things that are so special in my life, having this next generation, and we hormonal levels are going to be different. Like, so it's good for THC, you have really high THC, et cetera, et cetera. But like, no buts. It's great. Thank goodness for people that grow sensimilla. I love sensimilla and its role. But for my own hemp, and, you know, today I'm talking about federally permitted and under the short-lived 0.3% THC definition. It will soon rise to 1%, and then after that, let's all work to get it to be irrelevant to the farmer and let states decide. But when I'm growing my permitted hemp crop, I grow male and female crops because it seems to me that the hormonal balance that I see, the hormonal changes and all that I see naturally occurring when you just throw the seed in the ground as it has been for 8,000 years, maybe there's something to it when you're using those flowers for wellness, or when you're eating those seeds for superfood. This is like if you're a student looking for graduate, you know, agriculture, farming type stuff, or biochemistry, or molecular biology, or any of that stuff. Is a dioecious hemp plant that's planted and loved by the farmer in the soil, male and female, is that seed, does it have more proteins? Does it have a more ideal omega balance than seed that is maybe, well, if it's seeded, it's going to be dioecious, but then let's say cannabinoid levels in the flower of a plant that's grown from seed like that versus what today we see dominate the hemp industry just didn't even exist 15 years ago, which is people growing straight-up sensimilla plantations, often plugging clones, not planting from seed, through plastic weed mats.
Right, right.
And just growing just for that female flower. I'd like to see comparative studies in those types of modes in terms of, you know, what you're seeing come out of the plant.
I think you're totally right about all of that, Doug, and there are a number of people in the consciousness world who believe that we're separating into two groups of people that, and this is totally possible in terms of the quantum field, that you are having your experience at your ranch that is, you know, pretty much as close as heaven on earth as one can get. You're working in collaboration with the land and the air and the water and the universe and using universal principles of universal love in your farming practice. And next door to you literally could be someone who's stuck in this old paradigm and frustrated and thrives on, you know, stirring the pot and creating conflict and all of that in their lives, and that will be their reality. And I do think it's entirely possible that some people, you know, will choose to, at least for a while, to not ascend spiritually and environmentally, and choose to stay in their comfort zone and what they're used to. But I do believe that we are going to reach this point, which I know, I, you know, understand, I can feel that you know well, you reach a certain point in life where the choices are not there. Like, there's only one choice. There's only one choice in terms of how you're going to live your life or the decision that you're going to make. It's going to be the best choice, not only for yourself, but for everyone and everything involved. And that's, you know, that was what was intended for all of us, I believe. And that is where happiness, true happiness, lives. That is where we're all content and healthy, happy people.
I like the John Lennon lyric, why on earth are we here? Surely not to live in pain and fear. And so I agree with you totally. And with the preface of that really the only reason that I would care about anyone else's behavior outside of my, my immediate family, and, you know, for the most part, is I learned so much about myself from those few relationships, but the only reason I would care at all about what that, like you said, literally next door might be happening is this, what you might consider the commons, you know, like it's everybody's air, it's everybody's water, it's everybody's right to a, you know, if they want peacefulness and in their lives and stuff. So do what you want if it's not interfering with anybody else's rights directly, like human rights directly, and wider sort of what you might call commons rights. So I just want to preface it by saying I don't really care who agrees with my way of thinking or not, if it's not going to be impactful to any of those other things. And that said, I did learn what I think was a good lesson about being impactful and spreading the ideas that seem important. I've lived in some communities. I still live in a community, but I've lived in some communities around the world where the economy for a while, and all these old ways we're talking about, they're not that long-lived. They're pretty short-lived when you think
right.
about it. Not even cosmically, you know, just historically.
It's incredible how short-lived, right?
Right, and so, but folks that have been in the economy of the last, let's say, half century to century had been some sort of resource extraction, whether it's mining or whatever, and or trees, and the folks that are working towards regenerative living. In more than one place have demonstrated to me that a mode that may be the most effective is reaching youngsters as an educator, because everybody, you know, of all opinions has a readiness to start right at this. So one activist in Alaska, in a former mining community and timber community, would take students out. All the students out in the schools to study the life cycle of the salmon and see the river. And then where I live in New Mexico, it was called the trunk program, where you could volunteer and bring this trunk that was like this mystery. You're lugging this big old-fashioned kind of camping truck into a classroom, and what it is like all different sort of props for a balance, you know, this balanced, incredible wilderness ecosystem that surrounds us, from, you know, the predators of wolves through native fish. And this is what a wolf footprint looks like compared to a fox footprint. Here's a coyote's jawbone, and starting that discussion with kids of like the interconnectedness of all things. So for me as a parent, you know, my students are my kids. Obviously that's fundamental. And I'm so proud to be growing hemp with my whole family. And before the hemp was legalized here in New Mexico, this is only the second year we've been able to grow here. I've grown in other states, in Hawaii and other countries, in Vermont and Oregon and elsewhere. And my kids came with me to these harvests, and my son celebrated his sixth birthday planting hemp. So I'm very proud about that.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's great. Well, as a result of Hemp New York City, which I organized in 2016, and in the Great Hall at Cooper Union, we had two full days of lectures that are available on YouTube. But I began discussions with FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology, and Parsons School of Design, and I spoke at Parsons a year and a half ago on industrial hemp. But as a result of beginning those conversations, and their own interest, of course, but Hemp New York City got the ball rolling, there are mandatory required courses at both schools where 2,500 students, incoming students, have to take a course on industrial hemp as part of their design basic requirements.
That is awesome.
And that's really what needs to happen all over the world, so that, you know, students understand the gifts that industrial hemp has to offer the rest of us.
Absolutely. That is fantastic. Fantastic to hear. I know two different woman-owned enterprises in like swim gear, casual gear, and one of them, when I pushed this idea of how about like teaching your customer base about regenerative materials like hemp, and she said, I'd love to, you know, especially when we're like liquid and stuff, but you know what, most people don't care. They just care about these styles. And she was talking about younger people too, like Shikini Market or whatever. And the other one full on is going for it and hyping how important it is that what we put on our bodies is healthy, even when it's a bathing suit or whatever. So, yeah, it's really, it's the educational side is vital.
It just opens up your mind to all the possibilities of what you could create with this material that's been, you know, out of the picture for the past 70 years. So it's
one time at a Canadian hemp conference, a fellow came up to me and it was so funny. It reminded me of there was a Sesame Street character that was like the shady guy with the briefcase of hot items, hot watches or something. It was like this meme that I remember growing up in the East Coast and like when New York was kind of falling apart economically or whatever in the 70s. And there's like this meme of like, buddy, you know, and this like open this briefcase or like opens up the overcoat and on each side are like 20 hot watches or whatever. And so, this guy kind of did that to me. At the conference, and he said, hey, there, I enjoyed your talk. Just remember, hemp is just one of the, it's the spearhead, you know, it's just one of the many, many useful levels. And he opens up this briefcase, and he has this swath of like 50 different fibers, sisal and flax and everything, all the way through, you know.
Bamboo.
Hotropa.
Yeah.
It just went on and on. So, and his
That's
point
funny.
Was, and I've spoken to materials engineers about this too in my most recent book about this, but about how like different fibers are going to give different qualities, and they're all technical about it. Like it's no joke to make an industrial product. There's a certain uniformity of standard so that the part holds up. If it's on a rocket, it has to hold up and, you know, reentry or whatever. And so, like, you know what they call the aspect ratio and the tensile strength of different fibers. But what I came away with, what I would have come away with from continuing years of research on this is just, yeah, there's a plant, there's a material, a fungus, a plant, something that we can grow regeneratively and harvest that serves all of our needs as industrial digital age humans.
That is so true and so important for all of us to keep in mind. Well, Doug, we're almost out of time here. Is there any specific message that you'd like to leave our audience with?
Thanks. Thanks for that, and thanks so much for the great conversation. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I guess I just want to say I'm throwing, first of all, love and energy out to everybody that sinks their fingers in the soil and has this intention of building soil. I think that's really one of the best things that any individual can do, whether it's on an urban rooftop or taking a suburban lawn and growing something regenerative and what sometimes are called weeds or wildflowers or sometimes your friends, although sometimes you do have to protect your plants early on, but polyculture is good. And please, with your cannabis hemp, when feeding your endocannabinoid system and feeding your normal diet, please seek out hemp cannabis farmers who grow regeneratively in your region while building soil.
That's very well said. Thank you. And how can people get a hold of you? We'll have your bio and your new wonderful book, American Hemp Farmer, posted with this interview, as well as a photo of you and the fact that Amazon has named American Hemp Farmer the number one new release in agriculture. congratulations on that. That's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you. And, yeah, information on all that there's audio books and options and ebook options that you can link to from my website or support your local independent bookseller with much appreciation for everybody who reads and listens to audiobooks. So DougFine.com is a good place. And if you're on social media, at Organic Cowboy is my handle. Organic Cowboy scrunched together into one word with the two C's in the middle. And what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, I'm doing a regenerative hemp educational course with the regenerative farming organization Acres USA, and that's launched, and there's also information about that on my website, DougFine.com.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Doug. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure.
So special and wonderful, Mia, as we were discussing before we hit record, how nice to be approached to discuss the spiritual side, because that's where it all starts, that and the soil. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you. And we'll be back again to you sometime in the future and include our dear friend Alex Whiteplume in that conversation.
I'm looking forward to that and sending him and his family all our love and best thoughts.
Happy harvest tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.